The following Dharma talk was given by Ron Hogan Green. Hogan Sensei is a lay teacher in the Mountains and Rivers Order. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org.
Thanks for listening.
Good afternoon. Daozui's Fire at the End of the Kalpa. And I'm using a translation, a contemporary translation. Something's lost and something's gained in doing that, but it makes it more available to us. So this is case number 30 in the Book of Equanimity. And the preface to the assembly says, it extinguishes all relativities and cuts off duality. To break off the ball of doubt, what phrase can be adapted? The capital is not more than a tiny step away. The great mountain weight is only 3 pounds. Tell me, according to what principle does one speak in this way? In the main case, a student asked Daozui, it is clear that the fire at the end of this kalpa will completely destroy the universe. I'm still not clear whether there's something that won't be destroyed. And Daozui said, it will be destroyed. It will leave along with everything else. Everything will be destroyed. Then the student asked Longji, it's clear that the fire at the end of the kalpa will completely destroy the universe. I'm not clear whether there's something that won't be destroyed. Longji said, it won't be destroyed. Why won't it be destroyed? Because it's the same as the universe. The appreciatory verse, destroyed and not destroyed. Everything goes with it. The phrase did not function as hook and chain at all. The feet with brambles are hindered greatly. Understood and not understood. The crystal clear matter, so long-winded. Those who know when taking it up shouldn't barter. In my story, whether to buy or sell is up to you. So I came to Sesshin prepared to give a very different talk. But I kept hearing echoes within the Sangha and outside the Sangha of recent events that you're all familiar with and the associated fears and anxieties that come with it. And I thought this koan would be applicable not just to those particular fears and anxieties, but to all our fears and anxieties that arise out of misunderstanding of who we are. The preface to this koan points at how to see into what is right before us. And yet, in our underlying confusion and pain, we tend to get lost and wrapped up in our underlying confusion and pain. It extinguishes all relativities and cuts off duality. To break off the ball of doubt, what phrase can be adapted? How do we see to the bottom of our being? And what is that? One of the challenges in entering into a koan is to see into the offering beyond our self-referential perspectives, ways of thinking, to the heart of what's being offered, to the heart of ourselves. That heart always points to the wholeness within our tendency to divide up what is normally self-referential thinking and point to the heart of that koan and thus to our heart. That heart always points to our wholeness, within our tendency to divide up as what is before us. We may think that this or any koan has nothing to do with our lives. Non-relational, so far as I can see. And if we look at it that way, we're missing not only the point of the koan, but the entire point of Zen practice, which has to connect deeply and profoundly with our lives. It's that meaning within you're living in this life. And that meaning has to, in some way, address our separation from ourselves, a separation from life, in other words, suffering, distance from our life. And so when working with any koan, be it formally within practice, or the many koans that life brings before us, it will help us to see how this Dharma offering applies to us. It applies to my life, to my situation, to our circumstances. That's the point of it. Otherwise, it's just theoretical crap that has no weight to it. And, you know, we can think of koans in a very formal way, but as I just said, our life is full of koans. Any barrier before us is a koan. And to the extent that we approach it dualistically, we may take action on that basis. But we're also missing an opportunity to see something more fundamental about ourselves, about the situation, which has enormous power and which inevitably results in a wisdom and a compassion that not only is within us inherently, but reflects to others and affects others. I can remember so many times in this monastery where the abbots, would be faced with something, and it seemed obvious what to do, and they didn't do that. It seemed obvious what I would do, and they didn't do that. They did something that was almost counterintuitive, in a sense, to my own or how I envisioned the monastery's well-being, because that was the right thing to do. The right thing, meaning the whole thing, to do. So koans invite us to dig past the immediacy of what is before us, beyond feeling, beyond our opinions, and we treasure those feelings and opinions and revolve around them, past our self-defined identity without excluding that identity, and see into our original nature as it comes forth in the particulars of this koan, this barrier, in the particulars of our life. Studying a koan in this way challenges us. It challenges us to open up, to have a bigger picture, and apply it to the specifics of this situation. Can you see the two sides that are one side? A bigger picture, not just the immediacy of what we might feel we want or the situation demands, but see it from a larger perspective as well. And see it as one whole piece, not piece, one wholeness. And seeking to a koan demands more than accommodating it, more than accommodating a challenging and painful feeling or habitual tendencies that create pain for us. And we often know the habitual tendencies and we know the pain and we still may feel helpless or not willing or able to react out of a different place. Seeing into the koan stretches us past where we might on our own stop, limit our view, and limit our insight into our own fundamental nature, which is what the koan is offering us insight into. When I keep saying this, koans, both a formal and an informal, and we all have to deal with the informal ones of our life. They're not really informal. They're very formal. They're our life. And, of course, we practice so that we can work with the koans of our life in a way that does offer us and others that wisdom and compassion, non-dual wisdom and compassion, wholeness. And that isn't free, because in the relative world, we have to make choices. And in the relative world, every time we make a choice, the choices we're not making, and there's not just sometimes a price, there's always a price. There's always the roads not taken, and whatever that may represent. And there's always other people who may feel very strongly about your decision. And that may be the price. To me, one of the most interesting things of working with these challenges of our life, this koan, is that often we can see into the koan at some hard-to-define level, but may not be ready to relinquish our hold on our old patterns and the automatic ways that we react. We're just not ready to do that. And we'll still protect ourselves. We'll still create a barrier, a fence around us. And in subtle or overt ways, as Dada Roshi used to say, when we do that, we can't get out, nobody else can get in. And there it is. So we're purchasing safety, but at a huge cost. We're actually putting ourselves in jail. So we may recognize this, but still may struggle to let go until we're ready to let go. And there's a name for this. It's called Zen practices. This is what we're practicing. So it's not right or wrong. We're all human beings. We're all stuck in some ways, no exceptions to the rule. And so we practice. This struggle, or call it engagement or practice, can be apparent when we work on a fundamental koan, mu, for example, or similar koans, where we stick in our intellection, from which we have no access into the degree of the mystery that the koan offers us. You can't get there from here. You can't, but we try. And yet, the struggle is crucial. And we have to be willing to struggle. We have to be willing to sit with what hurts and face the consequences of our actions, thoughts, speech, patterns, because the only way that's going to change, if you want to transform, and understanding that ultimately there's no transformation, so I want to be careful with those words, but in a relative sense, there's a huge transformation. And if we want that, then we have to face our own responsibility for our life, which may include things that happened to us, which we had no direct cause to happen, and yet we're responsible for it because it's happening to me, not to anybody else. And so what are you going to do about that? Just say, it's not my fault that someone da-da-da-da-da-da has nothing to do with fault. It has to do with responsibility. It has to do with living your life. Do you want to live your life in a way that holds your life, that is responsible for your life, that carries your life with a degree of wisdom, intelligence, kindness, with anger, regret, fear, and anxiety. And it's not a yes or no thing, obviously. That's why our life is full of these koans. In this koan, it talks about a kalpa. And a kalpa refers to a vast period of time. The kalpa fire is a great conflagration that comes at the end of a kalpa, and it destroys everything. And the entirety of vast universes, gone. And of course, you can connect this to what science says about creation and destruction of stars and universes and galaxies, big bangs, etc. Like, the Big Bang was the beginning. No, no way. Do you know anything that came from nothing? There's always cause and effect. So after everything's destroyed, there's a kalpa of emptiness, nothingness. And then a universe arises again and exists for a kalpa until it's destroyed. Nothing new here. We can see this in innumerable ways in our life. So the kalpa fire destroys everything, the entirety of vast universes. And so, a student asked out, Dasui, it's clear that the fire at the end of this kalpa will completely destroy the universe. I'm not clear whether there's something that won't be destroyed. What do you think the student's asking about? You think he's asking about the universe being destroyed? He doesn't give a shit about that. Well, they don't give a shit about that. They're talking about themselves. Will I still exist? Is the implication. Surely not everything that I am goes, is the implication. There must be something that I own, have, possess, some part of me, some part of, what's it from the film, Precious, right? Maybe, no, I think you get the reference. So what is the most precious possession that we will hang on to? Almost no matter what. How much of our anger and fear and numbness arises from what we perceive to be a threat to ourselves, a threat to me, automatically almost, in spite of the fact we may not want it, but we're wrapped up in it. So Dasui says, it will be destroyed. You, all of you, will leave along with everything else. Well, that's too challenging for me to take in, then I'll ask another master. And by the way, that happens in the monastery all the time. A student gets an answer they don't want from one teacher, they go to another, ask the same question, and then compare the answers and see, well, they say that and they say this. One of them must be wrong. So the student asks Longji, it's clear that the fire at the end of the kalpa will completely destroy the universe. I'm still not clear whether there's something that won't be destroyed. Okay, you want another answer? It won't be destroyed. Well, why won't it be destroyed? Because it's the same as the universe. One master responds from the impermanence of all things. It will be destroyed. Another master responds from the unborn, undying perspective that we fundamentally are. It won't be destroyed. So there you have it. Will it be destroyed or not? Will you be destroyed or not? Yes? No? Maybe? How do you see this? It's not a casual question I'm asking. This plugs into everything in our life and our tendencies to fall to one side or the other, right? So if it's going to be destroyed, and I don't want that, I'll find out how it won't be destroyed. That's what I want. So where do you find yourself in this koan? So after this election, are we caught by our fears that a life as we know it, our treasures will be destroyed? That what we hold on to so with such preciousness will be threatened? There's a truth to that, perhaps. Or no, it won't be, because I'll desperately hang on to every piece of myself, and I'll protect it no matter what. So the preface says, is this destroyed or not? Is there already a double barrier? I think the preface says that, but anyway, it's a true statement. That's a duality that invites our mind to stop far away from this moment, this reality, the only reality that is this moment. To step away from this moment into the fearful forest of what ifs and what happens when. And there's no bottom to that fear, is there? Once we start that cycle, it endlessly creates itself. Entanglement upon entanglement. So how do you enter these very real entanglements that we all face in one way or another? Master Longji said, destroyed and not destroyed, both stop people dead. Both are a dead end. And so the question for each of us is, where do we stop dead? Where in our life do we stop dead? Where in our life do we not forgive somebody who has perhaps created harm for us? Or do we not forgive ourselves when we have judged ourselves in that way? There is only the fundamental truth that is not apparent in dualism, in this or that. And yet we live in dualism, right? We live in Republicans, Democrats, me, you. So how do we see into that so we're not trapped by the dualism? So the words, the meanings we assign them, and the thought processes that bring them forth can only result in further entanglements. We can apply our intelligence and conceptual understanding here, and that has its value, relatively speaking. And we need to be able to do that often. However, it's difficult to grasp this duality, this idea of myself destroyed versus myself not destroyed, or any other decision that confines you to one choice or the other, by relying solely on your feelings and thoughts. If that's the basis of how you're going to live your life, good luck, because that's the world we have now with all of its suffering. Our feelings and thoughts and desires, that's what we go right to, right? And when it gets exaggerated, you see the politics of that, right? And it does get exaggerated, because the karma of just considering your feelings and thoughts as your guideline is more feelings and thoughts. It's pretty obvious and simple. You dig in the hole deeper. So the words, the ideas, we have to see into. That's the point of the koans. The koans teach us to not ignore the words. We all understand words are just signposts. They're not the thing. The word tree is not the actuality of a tree. But we forget that, don't we? Particularly in our thoughts, we forget that. So the sixth ancestor, Wei Ning, is quoted as saying, what is impermanent is the Buddha nature, and what is permanent is the mind that discriminates all things, good or bad. Let me read it again so you can follow where this goes. What is impermanent is the Buddha nature, and what is permanent is the mind that discriminates all things, good and bad. Now, there's different ways to understand that, isn't there? It can be a duality. It is a duality. So a student said, the scripture says the Buddha, that Buddha nature, this is from the Nirvana Sutra, the scripture says that the Buddha nature is permanent, and yet you say it's impermanent. Isn't that interesting? Good and bad things, even the thought of enlightenment, are impermanent. And yet you say they are permanent. This is a contradiction causing the students all the more doubt and confusion. I say, good, good, enter there. And the sixth ancestor said, so let me say it again one more time because it can be hard to follow. The sixth ancestor says what is impermanent is the Buddha nature, and what is permanent is the mind that discriminates good and bad things. The Nirvana Sutra says the Buddha nature is permanent, and yet you say it's impermanent, sixth ancestor. Good and bad things, even the thought of enlightenment, are impermanent, and you say they're permanent. And thus, the apparent dualism, confusion, sticking to words, intellection. So the sixth ancestor said, if Buddha nature were impermanent, then what good or bad or anything else could we talk about anymore? If it's a fixed thing, Shugen Roshi pointed to this yesterday, there's nothing to talk about. It's fixed. It's never going to change. I don't know anything that doesn't change. Do you? And the sixth ancestor says, I think Buddha nature is impermanent, and that is the true way of permanence spoken of by the Buddha. Right to the heart of it. It's impermanent, and that's the permanence of it. Our nature is impermanent. Our life is impermanent. It's fundamental. But that we're not talking about things here. We're not talking about fixed things which never change. And as soon as you go there, it doesn't make sense, does it? As for good and bad things, even thoughts of enlightenment are impermanent, yet you say they're permanent. A thinking of things as things, in this case, good and bad things. In our thinking of them as things, they become permanent. When we permanentize something, it's out of our thought. Inherently, there's nothing that is that. But our thinking makes it permanent. So what can I picture that would make me happy and be permanent? Me. My life, I'm never going to die. What do you mean it goes with everything else? I want to be born again as me. I want the pleasures I have to continue ongoing and never change, although pleasures that continue ongoing change, don't they? And to not pleasures. Interesting. Even the thought of enlightenment is impermanent. We make them permanent in our mind. So to us, they're permanent. I don't know if you could follow all that because I'm throwing a lot out there. But if nothing else, we can see how just looking at the words themselves and not understanding that the words are symbols for something that is not a thing causes confusion. We see this in politics all the time, right? The most obvious example is when someone politically apologizes and you go, that's an apology? Would I want that kind of apology from someone I care about? Would I apologize that way? The appreciatory verse. Destroyed and not destroyed. Everything goes with it. No matter how you say it, how you think it, it's one whole. Destroyed, it's one whole. Permanent, it's one whole. Everything goes with it. Now apply that to everything in your life, every barrier, every koan. It's one whole. You are one whole as this universe. And that's what we're practicing to realize. And the realization is not a thing. It's not graspable. In a particular way, you have nothing to do with it. The verse goes on. Chiliocosms, the vast endless universe. You can say it is destroyed, impermanent. You can say it is not destroyed. In either case, everything goes with it. That's the wholeness. That aware of it or not, we're realizing in Zazen. That's the wholeness of Zazen. It's inherently that, but as we practice it, we do realize it to the extent that we practice it. I'm always stuck and pressed, really, with folks who come into Daisan and maybe they're working on Mu or working with their breath. And the instruction is so simple. Concentrate on your breath. When you notice you're not, because you're distracted by a thought, see that. Let it go. And come back to your breath. How do so many questions come about that? The instruction is very simple. It seems clear to me. But it's not so simple when we load that with all of our thoughts about things. All of our fears, our habitual anxieties, places that we run to. But that's still okay. That's the practice. See it. Let it go. What does let it go mean? It means come back to your breath. That's letting it go. You're no longer dwelling there. You're just coming back to your breath. And it's even clearer with working on Mu. Or any other koan like that. It's just Mu. That's it. That's the whole thing. Just like you yourself are the whole thing. That's what's being realized when you realize Mu. In a little way or a bigger way, but that's what's being realized. And sometimes I say just Mu, but you don't need the just. Because that implies other stuff that you don't need. It's Mu. That's what you're asked to concentrate on, to inquire into, to see into. How much more naked can you be? in your mind. So to trust yourself to do that is a big step. You know, I'm kind of slightly making fun of it, but it's no small thing to let go of yourself, because that's what you're doing. Ourself is our thoughts about ourselves. No matter what we're thinking, it's about ourselves. So we're training in letting go of that. And it takes time. And it takes struggle and challenge. And yet invisibly to us, we go deeper within ourselves. And it's invisible to us because the only way to measure it is step outside of that process and say, I'm here and I'm going deeper over there. And that defeats the whole process, of course, because you're no longer working on mu, or you're no longer being your breath, or you're no longer fill in the blanks. You've created a duality. And it's practice. The good news is this is the practice. So it's not bad. It's essential. There's no way to do it without that. The phrase didn't function as hook and chain at all. It's not a matter of this follows that in this practice. There's nothing linear or sequential here. It's already a whole, already is whole. It's all contained in each phrase, in each thing. Yet if we just follow the words, the feet with brambles are hindered greatly, the poem says. We trip up if you just stick with the words, as opposed to looking, investigating, questioning. Understood and not understood. And that's really, to me, a perfect way to put it. We kind of know, and we kind of don't know. And you can't nail it down past that. At least I can't. But we can trust something that doesn't have to depend on knowing or not knowing. It depends on, what does it depend on? I'm not even sure I can express it. But it depends on this, on the wholeness. So I'm using a word for something that has no word. So we kind of get it, but we can't understand it really. It's not within our grasp yet. It'll never be graspable by me. And yet, do you want to obsess about this matter endlessly? This is not the poem. This is my comment from the Peanut Gallery. Do you know the Peanut Gallery? Well, howdy doody. Do we wish to obsess about this matter endlessly? Does that help? To just loop it around and around and around. What if? When? How will I address this one? And that doesn't mean you shouldn't actually ask those questions. But when it becomes a loop, I mean, ask those questions if it helps. And that's, we're stuck there. Then it's really, we're really missing a life in that moment. And that has other consequences beyond that, because our energy spreads to other people. So, you know, it matters how each person here sits and how willing they are to put their whole body and mind into the breath, into awareness of the breath or the koan or just this moment. It matters because although it may not be visible to us, the energy, the bodhicitta that comes forth from this, from your practice, infects every single one of us. So Trump, election, my life, my job, my relationship, my, We spin in our dance of yes or no. Will I survive? Will I not survive? The crystal clear matter. When you see it clearly, you're not even seeing it. It's just completely you. It's crystal clear, and that misses it. So long-winded. We have to look at what we have to do to have some degree of clarity. I wish there were, Dad always used to say, if there's an easier way I would have found it, I wouldn't do this. Probably we all tried easier ways, but we're here. That's why we're here. Those who know when taking it up shouldn't barter. In my story, whether to buy it or sell it is up to you. Where are you in this moment of facing barriers or not facing barriers? Will you trust yourself to be present as yourself with all that that means? Will you trust your being to sit within yourself and not extend it out to share your fears and anxieties with others energetically, because that's what you're doing? Have you ever said something to someone innocently, so you thought, and it had a devastating effect? And when you realized that or were told that, you were horrified? I didn't mean to say that, or that's not what I meant, or it's pretty horrifying. That's what we're doing here. Well, we don't give it our all. And that's not to lay a guilt trip on you, because we all are giving and receiving at once. So we're all one piece. But we should be aware that what we do affects each of us, and certainly yourself. And we are communicating that. I have a friend who, when she's an empath, so when she sits next to someone who's deeply suffering, it radiates to her. And she can't sit in that storm. She actually has to move away. It's just too overwhelming for her. Now, I'm not commenting on that overwhelming or not. That's not my business. My point is, we are radiating virya energy. We're doing it. And we're affecting everyone else in the sendo, but not just in the sendo. Because how we sit and how we conduct ourselves in session affects our life. And we're going to walk out of the sendo, quote, into our life. And it's going to affect others. It does affect others. And if you're a bit sensitive, you can see that. You can feel that. I don't know if you've ever had an experience similar to this. It doesn't happen so much now because people sit next to each other on planes and don't talk anymore. But for the most part. But I used to come back from Sashin and sit and not talk to the person next to me. And they used to talk to me every time. And they would open. They'd share something. They'd invite me in without me saying anything. And just being responsive. That's the energy. It had nothing to do with me. It had to do with us sitting in Sashin. And I'm part of that. And you're part of that. And after that happens 4 or 5, 6 times, in its own way, individually, you realize something's going on besides my little thoughts of myself and how I did in the session, and there's an energy being given and received, which is always being given and received. So will you trust your being to sit within yourself, within existence or non-existence, in your seat, now, in this moment, in this moment, in this moment, within your breath, within mu, within just sitting in the moment, within this thought stream, because that'll be there too, obviously. Will you trust yourself to stay here and be with yourself when your mind is caught? Oh, your mind is never caught during Zazen. Well, then you're the only one. Will you trust yourself to sit without bartering? And that's why it says in my story, very personal statement, whether to buy or sell is up to you, me, what you do, how, what you bring to your Zazen, not as an absolute measurement of 3.5 on a 5 scale. We're not talking about that. We're just talking to do the very best you can. That's all. It's very simple. No measurement whatsoever, just within whatever circumstance you're struggling with, or inquiring into, or working with, just do the best you can to be fully present with it. To do the best you can to not run away and hide behind the thought stream, beyond the habitual ways that we tend to run away and hide. And when we do run away and hide, which we will, do you trust yourself to see that, to let that go and come back? And when you can't come back and you struggle on, and then it gets clear, will you trust yourself for that process as well? So you can't go wrong here, except by not engaging. So we practice seeing into the self nature of our being. And in seeing into our being, we see into all beings, all things. And we are naturally realizing the non-dual nature, our non-dual nature. Non-dual nature. So, destroyed, not destroyed. Two sides of the same coin. Actually not. They're exactly, wholly, the same coin. The same coin. There's not two separate sides. There's only the coin. And a practice of realizing that wholeness as yourself. And that's what we're doing here.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as cushions, incense, liturgical instruments, Dharma books, and more, visit monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.